It's Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up on Central Time, Vice President Joe Biden is not running for president. We'll get the latest from our political correspondent, Harry Enten.
First, two campaign-related bills are being debated in the Wisconsin State Assembly today.
One would change campaign finance law in Wisconsin. The other would eliminate the Government Accountability Board. And yesterday, Assembly and Senate Republicans approved a bill that would end John Doe probes of political crimes. Democrats say these laws would open the door to political corruption in the state.
Sean Johnson has been covering these bills, and he's here with the latest. He's the state government reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio. Hey, Sean, welcome back.
Hey, Veronica.
So as we just mentioned yesterday, Assembly and Senate Republicans passed a bill that ends John Doe probes of possible political crimes. So how would these sorts of allegations of wrongdoing be investigated in the future?
In the future, they would have to be investigated through a grand jury, which is something that other states use. It is not something that prosecutors have used in Wisconsin, though. So when you look back at investigations of, you know, wrongdoing by political officials, let's say in the legislative caucus scandal from a little more than a decade ago, the prosecutors in that case used the John Doe. If you look at the people who were charged, associates of Governor Walker, when he was Milwaukee County Executive, that was a John Doe investigation. And then you fast forward to this investigation that is known as John Doe 2, which was investigating whether Governor Walker's campaign illegally coordinated with conservative groups in the recall. That was a John Doe. And that's ultimately the case that Republicans decided they didn't want to see repeated. They didn't think that it was fair. And so that's sort of the impetus for the bill that we saw in the Senate and Assembly yesterday.
Now, this one has been signed by both chambers, so it's just waiting a signature, right?
It is, yeah. And I mean, it's sort of an awkward situation in a way, because it is born out of an investigation of the governor. So it may not be something where he has a big signing ceremony to talk about this. But this is something that had every Republican support and, strong support. Among the changes that it would make is it would put a 6-month time limit on investigations, John Doe investigations. It would publicize the funding for these investigations, and it would lift the gag order on investigations on people who are subjects of investigations. So right now, a John Doe is supposed to be a secret proceeding. This would lift that secrecy for people who are the subjects of an investigation, though not for the prosecutors. At the same time, though, I think the biggest change that it's making is that it's changing which crimes can be investigated using this prosecutorial tool. So a lot was made of the fact that a judge in the federal Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals called the gag order as part of the John Doe screamingly unconstitutional. And so that's why you have this this gag order listed as part of the bill. But it's the John Doe itself still exists for many crimes. It will not exist for crimes like bribery or misconduct in office, crimes, that would be kind of by definition committed by legislators, by public officials.
Now, Republicans have said that this bill is about protecting free speech and about transparency. What have Democrats had to say about it?
Yeah, you heard some pretty, emotional arguments from both sides yesterday. It may be the first time I've heard an Assembly and Senate debate where the people debating, and this was Republicans, drew comparison to Nazi Germany not once, not twice, but three times, saying that the John Doe investigations and the search warrants carried out as part of the John Doe investigations were like Nazi Germany. They didn't dance around that. They said it. It's worth noting that the bill that passed does not change the process for how search warrants are carried out. That will carry on for other crimes. For Democrats, the point that they're making over and over again, I think to the point that you could say they see this as a potential narrative for them in the 2016 elections. They're saying Wisconsin is open for corruption, and this is drawing off Governor Walker's famous saying, Wisconsin is open for business. they have hit that that point pretty much every press conference, every floor session since all of these bills started rolling out. So you can probably expect to hear more of that.
We're talking with Sean Johnson, WPR State Capitol reporter right now, talking about some election-related bills being debated in the Assembly today and also movement on the John Doe bill, which is now waiting for the governor's signature. So moving on to a bill to overhaul campaign finance law in Wisconsin. Quickly, Sean, how would that bill change current law?
There are some pretty big changes and from the way that we have historically operated in Wisconsin. It would essentially codify a couple recent Supreme Court and federal court decisions involving what people can give to political parties and legislative campaign committees, and then a recent Supreme Court decision tied to that John Doe 2 case again that basically opened the door for near unfettered coordination between candidates and interest groups who can accept unlimited donations from secret donors as long as they don't use words like vote for or vote against. So under this bill that is sponsored by Speaker Robin Voss and Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald, that coordination between candidates and issue groups would be allowed to go on, pretty much unregulated as long as they don't use those words. So donors could give unlimited secret donations to these groups. They could coordinate with these candidates and the state would not get involved. The other big change is political parties would be able to accept unlimited funds, and legislative campaign committees, these are the committees controlled by the Assembly Speaker and the Senate Majority Leader, would be able to accept unlimited donations under this bill.
What has Robin Voss and other supporters of the bill said about why they think this is something Wisconsin needs right now?
A couple things. They say that this is just codifying what the courts have done. And the other thing is that Robin Voss says this basically embraces the First Amendment, that that these are going to be the ground rules for everyone, and that you will have the ability to have a vigorous debate of the ideas, and sometimes that debate takes money. So he's really you talk about staying on a message. That's one that he stays on every time he talks about campaign finance, is that this is essentially embracing what the courts have said. However, I think some of these changes that they're making are changes by choice. I mean, they are breaking from the pack. What they're doing with regulating issue ads and their issue groups, their ability to coordinate with candidates, is a bit more far-reaching than you're seeing in other states.
Now, the Government Accountability Board has spoken out against this, saying it's being fast-tracked and moving too quickly. The Government Accountability Board itself is also an entity that could be changing in the near future. There's a bill also out there now to eliminate the Government Accountability Board and change it into two separate entities handling separate functions to do with elections. Sean, where are we with that right now?
That is being that's going to pass the State Assembly this afternoon. It would replace them with two entities that are very much like the Federal Election Commission. So you would have an equal number of appointees from Republicans and Democrats. Republicans who are sponsoring that say that's a fair system by any measure. Critics of it say that, well, what actually you're going to do is create a toothless system because the FEC doesn't enforce anything. You'll have partisan gridlock and crimes will go on uninvestigated because this board isn't going to do its job.
Has the Government Accountability Board had much to say publicly about this bill affecting them, obviously?
You've heard a lot of members of the Government Accountability Board, and these are reserve judges, former full-time judges, speak out against it and say, essentially what you're seeing. Because, I mean, the judges who have served on the Government Accountability Board feel like they did a good job. And so they're saying that essentially what you're seeing now is you have single party control in state government. Most other agencies answer to Republicans and give them the answers they want to hear. You have this one agency who's not under their control, and the majority party is going to do something about it. you know, Republicans, when they hear that, again, point to this, the fact that this board will be split between Democratic and Republican appointees. But, you know, the former board members say it's not going to have the strength to investigate ethics and elections violations that it has now.
And we leave it there. Sean, thanks a lot for joining us again.
You're welcome.
That was Sean Johnson, WPR State Capitol reporter. He joined us there to talk about election-related bills being debated in the state assembly today.
Vice President Joe Biden is not running for president. He announced his decision this morning at the White House, saying his window to launch a bid has closed.
It's our weekly look at the latest in national politics with Harry Enten, senior political writer and analyst for 538. Now that Biden is out of the picture, eyes are focusing on Hillary Clinton as she prepares to give her testimony to the House Select Committee on Benghazi. That's tomorrow.
A little closer to home, Wisconsin's Paul Ryan has agreed to run for House Speaker, but only if his conditions are met. Harry Enten joins us now. Harry, welcome back.
Hello.
So Biden not running for president. It seemed like we didn't know which way this was going to go until he started talking today.
Well, you know, we had so many false media reports out there, people saying, oh, he's going to announce that he's going to run in 24 hours, 48 hours, 72 hours. And this has gone on for a number of weeks now. But what Biden never did was he never built the campaign apparatus in order to run for president. Remember, it's October 21st right now. It's very late in the campaign. Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton and Martin O'Malley have been in the state of Iowa for a number of months now, putting a team together. Biden made no moves towards that. And yes, we heard those reports, but there was no campaign apparatus, hence no campaign.
You know, you look at that speech, though, and about, I don't know, maybe two-thirds of it was all stuff he could have said announcing that he was running for president.
He learned a great trick from the press, as you know. You write your story ahead of time, and then you amend it depending on which way you feel that particular day. So, yeah, it sounded that could have easily been a campaign speech, and there's no doubt that Biden was going back and forth, I think, in his own mind, where he was like, I really want to run. I really want to do this. I've been in the United States Senate since 1973. I was a vice president now for 7 years. It's my time. But I think at the end of the day, what Biden realized was there was no viable path to actually win the election, win the Democratic nomination, and that got the better of him, and that's why he's out.
And it seems like he's really putting himself out there, not as a, you know, you won't have Joe Biden to kick around anymore, but Joe Biden is going to be a powerful voice in the Democratic Party. So what role does he play now?
I think that he plays a senior, you know, a senior statesman. He'll play the same role that Barack Obama will play as Obama's time in office winds to a close. He's going to probably endorse one of the candidates running for president down the line, and when he does so, it'll be this, you know, great ceremony where Biden will bestow upon this candidate his, you know, guiding hand, his wishful hand. And so he'll do that, and he'll try and, you know, fight for legislation that he believes is important to the American people. But at the end of the day, Biden's time as an elected official will be coming to an end on January 20th, 2017.
So he's out. Good news then for Hillary Clinton's primary campaign?
I would say this is one of the best days in her campaign in a very long time. You know, Bernie Sanders has mounted a nice campaign for president, but he's never really gone beyond the liberal base of the Democratic Party, while Clinton has been able to reach all different sections. The only other candidate who probably could have done so was Joe Biden, who, of course, is a sitting vice presidential candidate, who if Barack Obama had endorsed, it would have been a big deal. Once Biden's out, the polls indicate that most of his support goes to Hillary Clinton, who now, with Biden out, has over 50% of the vote nationally, and we'll see about Iowa and New Hampshire as the polls come out in the days and weeks ahead.
Wild speculation. Joe Biden, assuming there's a Democratic president, a cabinet position for him?
I mean, of course, it's possible. You know, the old joke was Joe Biden is the greatest vice president this country's ever had. Why doesn't Clinton pick him? But remember, Joe Biden at this point is even older than Hillary Clinton is. And I think he's going to go back to Delaware. He'll probably spend time with his family, who he loves. That's very clear from all the statements he's made. So, you know, he's been on the national stage for a very long time, and it's been an illustrious career. And there's nothing I don't think to be ashamed of if I'm him.
Talking to Harry Enten about the latest in national politics. Well, Hillary Clinton now, tomorrow, testifying to the House Select Committee on Benghazi. A lot of buildup to this in the political world. What are we going to be looking at tomorrow?
I think, if I were to speculate, I think what we'll be looking at the end of the day is that Hillary Clinton, this is her last big test of this month. And if she is able to get through those proceedings without really getting hurt, then she is going to be in an even stronger position to be the Democratic nominee for president. And we'll see how Republicans treat her. I think that there has been a lot of talk recently that this is a partisan witch hunt. So it's going to be sort of this matchup where Republicans are going to want to go after her hard so that they can justify what they've been doing in building this all up and spending over $4 million of taxpayers' money on these investigations. But at the same time, they don't want to come across as merely being partisan. So I don't know exactly how Republicans are going to handle this, though they're obviously going to be asking her about why wasn't there more security, how did you allow this to happen, what's the security situation on the ground now, at least when as of when she left office. So, you know, it's going to be a very interesting, good political theater to watch.
One thing that emerged from this Benghazi investigation, and there will be questions about that, but the email issue, the private email server, were classified emails in the wrong place, that sort of thing. Is there talk that that's going to be featured tomorrow?
There's talk that it would be featured insofar as it relates to Benghazi, but I don't think that they're going to be opening up a whole new bag of worms with that, going deep into the emails beyond how it applies to Benghazi. And you could already tell, at least on the Democratic side, that there is just a general sickness that they don't want to talk about this email stuff anymore. You saw Bernie Sanders last week, you know, basically hugging Hillary Clinton on national television saying, we're sick of the emails. I think that Clinton, at this point, as long as she can get through tomorrow, and it seems like she's going to, it's just going to be a very, very strong position.
All right. We've been talking about the Speaker of the House and who's going to be the next one for a while now, and this whole will he or won't he with Paul Ryan. Yes, if is the answer. So what conditions is Paul Ryan looking at to get him to go for this job?
It seems like he almost doesn't want it with the conditions that he's put out. Essentially, he wants unity. So he wants all of the House, you know, Republican caucuses to get behind him. Most importantly, the Freedom Caucus, which was a thorn in the side of John Boehner and a thorn in Kevin McCarthy, and one of the reasons McCarthy ultimately didn't want to go for it. So that's one. And the other thing is they want to essentially kill the rule to vacate the chair. That is, if Ryan were to become a speaker, he doesn't want to be voted out with a majority of the vote from Republicans saying, you know, we don't want you no longer to be the Speaker of the House of Representatives. These conditions are things that the Freedom Caucus simply just doesn't seem willing to do at this point. And I think Ryan kind of knows that. He's sort of making a Hail Mary. If I can get all of my conditions met, then that would be great. But otherwise, he's going to be happy just going back to being a chairman. So I don't think Ryan is going to end up being the speaker, but this speaker race has been going on for so long and so many twists and turns, nobody really knows.
And Ryan was a conservative favorite. People happy when he became the vice presidential candidate for the Republicans. Now some prominent conservative radio show hosts speaking out against him. I've gotten emails from Phyllis Schlafly in the Eagle Forum saying they don't trust him on issues. Are we seeing more people on that conservative wing turning against him?
Yeah, I mean, there are a number of things that are going on here. I think that Republican Party generally, if we look at roll call votes over the years, we see that the House Republican Caucus has gone further right. Ryan is relatively moderate on immigration. That's a big deal right now in the Republican race for president. You see that with Donald Trump. And he being open to immigration negotiations in terms of immigrants who are here illegally just doesn't play well for him. So it's going to be interesting to see. You know, it's not a matter. I mean, obviously, these congressmen look at, you know, outside voices. But at the end of the day, it's all about those members of Congress and not about those outside voices. And how they vote, we don't know yet.
Turning to the Republican side of the presidential race, you just mentioned Donald Trump. A headline, I think, on your 538 website, something like Donald Trump is doomed and or inevitable. So this is a wild card here. We don't know what's going to happen with this unprecedented type of candidate.
Sure. I mean, if you look historically and you look at where Donald Trump is and he has no real support from establishment figures, he hasn't raised any money, he hasn't really spent any money on a campaign apparatus, you would think Donald Trump was going nowhere. But Donald Trump is Donald Trump. He gets a lot of free airtime from the media. He's been in the lead in the polls since July. The longer that goes on, the longer you sort of go, I wonder. But at the end of the day, I think the agreement that we've generally come to here at 538 is Trump isn't likely to be the nominee. The real question is the fact that he's been able to stay in the lead so long with what he's doing, what does that say about other candidates who otherwise you might dismiss, like Ted Cruz? Maybe he has a much better shot than we would have thought otherwise.
And then the issue you're really following these days, not this politics stuff, I understand you're a big fan of the New York Mets.
I enjoy watching the New York Metropolitans play on the television, that baseball game, and they've been doing fairly well so far, and we'll see if they're able to clinch tonight.
What are you prognosticating there at 538?
I think that when you're up 3-0, we prognosticate that you're most likely going to win the series. You don't need a lot of complex math for that.
Our neighbors in Chicago and their long-suffering Cubs, not a lot of hope there?
I would say the Cubs are a great team, but they haven't been hitting a lot of home runs, which is something that they needed to win, and the Mets pitching has been dominant. And, of course, the Mets also have Daniel Murphy playing for them. So as long as he keeps hitting and the Mets keep on pitching, it's going to be a tough road to haul for the Chicago Cubs.
Good luck to you, Harry. Thanks, as always, for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
We've been talking politics and a bit of baseball with Harry Enten, senior political writer and analyst for 538. He joins us every week at this time with the latest in national politics. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. The results of the latest Wisconsin survey are out. Twice every year, Wisconsin Public Radio, Wisconsin Public Television, and St. Norbert College ask Wisconsinites about their opinions and attitudes on political issues. Over the next couple of days, we'll break down some of the results here on Central Time, and so will our friends over at the Joy Cardine Show.
One race that's been getting a lot of attention, despite being over a year away, is the upcoming rematch between Russ Feingold and Ron Johnson for one of Wisconsin's U.S. Senate seats. According to the Wisconsin survey results, if the election were held today, Feingold would have an 11-point edge over Johnson.
Here with us now to break down the survey results and take a closer look at the race is Tim Dale. He's an assistant professor of political science at UW-La Crosse. Tim, thanks a lot for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So, Tim, based on these results, we have Russ Feingold at 51%. People would vote for him today if the race were held today. 40% for Ron Johnson. How significant is that lead?
Well, it's a pretty significant lead, although there are many factors in this race that kind of lean toward Feingold. One advantage Feingold has right now is that most of the time challenger candidates are working on name recognition this early in the race, and Feingold doesn't have that issue at all. These two candidates are well known in Wisconsin. And so these polls are going to look more like polls look a little closer to the election, where we're not going to see a lot of undecided voters or voters who don't have an opinion about either candidate.
Now, the survey also looked at Senator Johnson's approval rating. 38% of respondents either approved or strongly approved of his job performance, and 39% either disapproved or strongly disapproved. So what's your takeaway there? People just have strong opinions about Senator Ron Johnson?
Right. And Johnson is in a completely different position than he was the last time, where last time he was an outsider candidate challenging an incumbent, obviously. This time, Johnson is the incumbent. And so he's subject to the same political dynamics that Feingold had. And so if you have strong opinions about Congress, you have strong opinions about the different parties, you're going to be able to place the blame on Johnson if you're not happy with the way things are going. And so he's really running on a record now that is why we see those numbers the way that they are.
Right. And so last time around, Ron Johnson sort of portrayed himself as a Washington outsider who felt compelled to run for the Senate seat to go to Washington and try to fix things. Now, this time around, that narrative isn't going to work. He's been doing the job. He's been part of Washington. So what do you expect his message will be like?
Well, that's going to be an interesting thing going into the race. I think Johnson is going to argue that he stayed true to his position. So he has not changed his position to become more moderate on some issues, for example. This is part of his argument for why he didn't change his positions. It's very difficult when you become a part of such a large group as the U.S. Senate to get things done. So even people who run on fixing government, it takes more than a single senator to do that. And so Johnson's going to have to make arguments about what he did while in the Senate that was in favor of the agenda that he brought to the Senate, and also what his plans are going forward. It's going to be a combination of this is what he's accomplished and done, and also weighing what his plans are for the future that the voters are going to have to make a decision on.
So it's interesting, this rematch that's being set up now. Now, it's tempting to say this is 2010 all over again, but it's a different race now. What do you think are some of the biggest differences this time around?
Well, the biggest difference, and this is really going to be a dominating factor in this race, is that we have a presidential race going on. So we might recall in 2010, we had a huge Republican year. We had Scott Walker elected into the governorship of Wisconsin. Ron Johnson was running, but there was no presidential race going on. And so the dynamics of that race in the state of Wisconsin are completely different than the dynamics of a presidential race. And so actually, Russ Feingold has done very well in presidential races. In midterm elections, he does worse. And so if you look back in the history of even Feingold running, in those presidential races, Democrats and Feingold have enjoyed quite a boost. And there's actually a similar dynamics as we saw 4 years ago or 3 years ago at this point with Tammy Baldwin winning the other Senate seat from Wisconsin. She's running in a presidential year. And so there are political things going on in the universe that are going to have an impact on this race. And that's also one of the reasons we see the poll results come out the way that they did.
Now, in 2010, there was a Tea Party wave that helped usher Ron Johnson in. What is the situation like there right now for the Republican Party? It seems a little more fractured.
It certainly is more fractured. And even though this isn't Ron Johnson's chamber in the legislature, we see a lot of politics going on in the House right now, trying to select a speaker. And the Republican Party is still in a state where there is a battle going on for kind of its core. And so Johnson represents a more conservative side of the party, but Republicans aren't even in agreement with each other about what the direction of Congress should be in terms of compromising or really taking a stand and fighting against an Obama agenda. And so I think without kind of that core really won or lost yet in the Republican Party, there's some elements to that Johnson's going to be fighting for, although as the incumbent, and he's already going to enjoy the support of all the Republicans in Wisconsin, there's that national dialogue that he's going to have to deal with.
We're talking to UW-La Crosse political scientist Tim Dale about new Wisconsin survey results taking stock of next year's Senate race between incumbent Ron Johnson and former Senator Russ Feingold. 51% said they'd vote for Feingold if the election were held today. 40% said they'd favor Johnson. And on a national scale, you know, zooming out a little here, Tim, how important is this particular Senate race in Wisconsin?
Well, I think once again we're going to see the case where Wisconsin's the center of the political universe. With Paul Ryan when he was running for vice president, and now Paul Ryan, who's possibly going to be the Speaker of the House, you have the Senate race. This is one of the races where Democrats are going to be targeting because they see it as a possible pickup. And I'm not sure if we'll be talking about the future of the Senate in terms of a majority, but this is going to be a race that everyone is watching around the country. And because of what the poll results that we're looking at today, which shows that Feingold really is the favorite in this race, and anywhere in that you can pick up a Senate seat is pretty significant. And I know that the Democrats would love to see Feingold come back into the Senate, and I know that the Republicans would really like to hang on to the seat. Having a Senate seat for the state of Wisconsin is a really key victory for Republicans, too.
And so maybe looking at the polls, getting closer to Election Day, do you think the numbers there and then the eventual result will be seen as sort of a bellwether for what's going to happen across the rest of the nation?
I think it's possible that Wisconsin is seen as a bellwether, although I think Wisconsin may even fall into that column, and we see this in this poll, that if the Republicans lose, they're not going to claim a bellwether in Wisconsin. They're going to be looking at other states because Wisconsin is going to be a difficult and uphill climb for Republicans if these poll numbers hold up. But it certainly is on that list of states that is going to be closely watched.
So Feingold ahead, is, according to these results right now, held pretty far out from the race. But Feingold hasn't had an entirely smooth ride. He has the name value, but he's also had to face tough questions about money spent by his Progressives United PAC and also questions about whether he's turned his back on his campaign finance principles, which was a core part of his platform last time around. So with these issues facing Feingold, how do you think he needs to approach them?
Well, being out of politics for a while is a luxury and a curse. So you don't get to have the press, but then you also don't get to have the press. And so he's certainly going to have to answer these questions. What an interesting dynamic here is that Feingold is now going to be taking the outsider role in this race, or at least trying to claim it. So even though people will remember when Feingold was a senator, he is not currently in the Senate. But the questions that you ask are the questions that he is going to have to answer. And so it's certainly going to be a tough campaign. But I think one of the things we're going to see in this race, and one of the reasons why I think a lot of people will be paying attention to it, is that it really will come down to core differences between the two parties and these two candidates. And both of these candidates are really committed to principles and issues. I think if we're going to see negativity in the race, kind of the personal negativity that people really don't like, it's going to come from outside groups. I don't think we're going to see that from these two candidates. I think we're going to see some of these tough questions about the issues. And I think that we really are going to have a true debate about these issues as this race goes forward.
And how active, I should say, do you expect outside groups to be in this particular Senate race?
Well, the more attention a race has and the more likely a race is going to change seats and change parties, the more you get outside groups' attention. And because we have essentially unlimited spending on campaigns by outside groups, I would predict that we're going to see a lot of money pouring into Wisconsin. We might actually see less money if the polling is in double-digit difference between the candidates. That is, if it looks like the outcome is a foregone conclusion. We're way too far out from the election to call that now. But I think that would be the only thing that would push down the spending. Otherwise, I would predict that come September and October of 2016, every single commercial we see on TV is going to be a political commercial.
And also, Tim, to follow up on something else you said Feingold would be running more or less as an outsider this time around. Is that going to work for him? He was in the Senate for quite a while. He knows Washington well. He knows his way around. So how does that narrative play out?
Right. Well, this is the really interesting thing about someone who was an incumbent at one time, but then takes some time off from politics and comes back in. Those races can either take one of two directions. The candidate can be seen as someone who's lost, so was ineffective, and is bringing all the baggage of incumbency without any of the advantages. The other way it can play out is that typically the longer someone is out of politics, the more their approval rating goes up. That is, people remember good things and don't remember as much bad. This is one of the reasons why we always affectionately remember ex-presidents, even though at the end of their term they typically have low approval ratings, no matter what party they represented. And so I think it has been a while since Feingold was in office, and it will be interesting to see how this race plays out and how Feingold's candidacy plays out, because I think it could go in either direction, and I'm sure that this is the question that the campaign is asking themselves behind the scenes. How do we make sure we can control it going in one direction as opposed to the other?
UW La Crosse political scientist Tim Dale is with us right now. We're talking about new Wisconsin survey results looking at next year's Senate race between incumbent Ron Johnson and former Senator Russ Feingold. 51% of respondents said they'd vote for Feingold if the election were held today, while 40% favored Johnson.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What's your reaction to these latest poll numbers? What issues are important to you in this race for Senate? And if the election were held tomorrow, who would you vote for and why? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're looking at the latest Wisconsin survey results. Today we're focusing in on what respondents had to say about a Russ Feingold-Ron Johnson rematch for U.S. Senate. UW La Crosse political scientist Tim Dale is with us to break down the results and the big issues at play in this election.
You can join our conversation at 800-642-1234. If this election were held today, who would you vote for and why? And what do you see as the big differences between this race and that 2010 contest between Johnson and Feingold last time around? If you did vote in that election, going to vote the same way again this time? Call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. And Tim, last time, the Affordable Care Act was looming large. Opposition to it was a big deal among Republicans and was perhaps a big driver to the polls. Has that receded now? And if so, what are the big issues going to be this time?
Well, I think it certainly is going to be an issue. And I think that probably the underlying issue for the Affordable Care Act is one that is probably the bigger theme, and that is the role of government. And this is where you have major differences between the two parties. You're going to have whoever the nominees are for president having pretty significant disagreements on this issue, and you're going to have Feingold and Johnson having significant disagreements on this issue. So I think that the Affordable Care Act back in 2010, and then now perhaps even more, is really a question about what the role of government is or should be. And so I think when you hear a debate between Johnson and Feingold, you're going to hear questions about the Affordable Care Act. And in answers to that, what you really are hearing from each candidate is going to be about the role of government. So that's going to take the form of questions about the minimum wage, for example. But I think that the Affordable Care Act is going to be, there's going to be a new set of arguments like the Affordable Care Act based on what the presidential candidates will be running on. And I think we will hear from these candidates about that.
We're going to go to our callers now. We've got Mel on the line first in Madison. Mel, hi.
Hello.
What's your take?
Can you hear me?
Yep. Loud and clear. What do you think about this race?
Okay. Well, first of all, I don't know if you have Mr. Feingold in the studio there, but I hope he's listening. I've been waiting years for him to come back to public life, so I'm really glad to hear this news, principally because he's the best hope we have, I think, for taking back our state from conservative forces that have tried to drag us 100 years into the past. People need to understand that this is the state where the 40-hour work week was born and set the standard for protections against employers abusing employees.
And Mel, thank you so much. I've got the gist there of what Mel's saying. Tim, I want to get you in on that. And Mel sounding pretty happy to have Russ Feingold back in action in Wisconsin politics. Is that something, a sentiment that you've seen among Democrats in the state that in a time in Wisconsin when Republicans are in power in the state house, that they're looking to Russ Feingold as a, I don't know, as a hero coming back?
Well, and I think the caller indicates what we've heard from a lot of Democrats, and I think even insofar as they were hoping Feingold might even get into the race for governor at one point. I think when you look around the state for possible candidates, big name candidates that Democrats kind of rely on or go to in their minds and in their arguments, Feingold is certainly at the top of that list. So the caller indicates what a lot of Democrats are saying, and one of the reasons we see the poll numbers so high is that Feingold is going to get support from nearly 100% Democrats and does fairly well among independents in the state of Wisconsin. And so I think that name familiarity is also, for a lot of people, an affectionate remembering of what Feingold represented for them.
All right. Thank you so much for your call, Mel. Appreciate that. And let's go on next to Phil in Rhinelander. Phil, hi.
Well, hi. I'm voting for Feingold, and I agree with the last caller that, that he's been on top of my list in the Democratic Party, and I'm just glad to see his name in our ticket, and I'm hoping that he can do well, and I just feel he's the most trustworthy we've had in the Democratic Party in the last few years. I'm going to leave it at that.
All right, Phil, thanks for that. Phil, echoing a bit with what Mel had to say. And Tim, are there any Democrats out there, tried and true Democrats, who aren't as enthused about Russ Feingold, who maybe have issues with some of the position changes?
Right. I think he polls very well among Democrats. And I think that the big question for the race is going to be how well either Feingold or Johnson do with people who identify as independent. It's really the independent vote, the vote that are people who would normally be undecided or are willing to vote for candidates from either party. This is where Feingold has done well in races where he's won. He does well among independents. And if we just do kind of a thought experiment, if Feingold wins by a margin larger than the Democratic candidate, it means that there are, for president, it means that there are people who vote for the Republican candidate for president and then vote for Feingold for Senate. And I think those are the people that are interesting to think about in this race going forward, is that there are going to be a certain number of people in Wisconsin who will be voting for one party for the president and then the other party for Senate. And I think that's really the deciding factor in a lot of these closer races or races that might switch parties.
We're talking to UW-La Crosse Professor Tim Dale about the Wisconsin survey results, looking at a matchup between Russ Feingold and Ron Johnson coming up there, and Feingold coming up on top with 51%, 40% for Ron Johnson. And we have a comment here from Joyce in Elko, maybe that's how it's pronounced, called to say that she would vote for Russ Feingold because she says he supports Social Security sustainability, and Ron Johnson voted to privatize Social Security. So what about that issue of Social Security? Is that going to be a factor?
I think it will be because it connects to this larger issue of what the government's role in the economy should be and whether there should be more free market influences on things like Social Security or whether it should be more governmentally determined. And it really gets to the heart of the disagreement between Republicans and Democrats broadly. So I think that question or that issue really is going to be one of the core issues of the race.
Now, before we let you go, Tim, it's a separate factor, but Governor Walker, you know, has been a big figure here in Wisconsin politics. And in the Wisconsin survey, 39% of respondents say they approve or strongly approve of Governor Walker's job performance. Is any of this going to get bundled in with Governor Walker? Will people sort of equate Ron Johnson with Walker anyway? Could this change how people vote?
It's possible, although I think when Walker is at the top of the ticket, it would make more difference than if the presidential candidates are at the top of the ticket. So if Walker were running for re-election in the coming election cycle, I think there would be more arguments that would be bundled. But in the case of the U.S. Senate, there are a lot of questions and issues that are dealt with at the national level that aren't necessarily issues that are state issues and vice versa. And so I think Walker's approval rating, Walker's policy stances, there may be some things that tie into some of those bigger economic issues. But this Senate race is going to be a huge draw of attention and money. And I think in many ways it will take attention away from anything that Walker is having to deal with politically.
And we leave it there. Tim, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
That was Tim Dale, Assistant Professor of Political Science at UW-La Crosse, talking about new Wisconsin survey results, looking at the matchup coming up between Ron Johnson and Russ Feingold.
Hey, Doc, you better back up. We don't have enough road to get up to 88.
Roads, where we're going, we don't need roads.
An iconic moment there from the end of the 1985 movie Back to the Future, before our heroes leap ahead in time in a flying DeLorean.
But the question being, how far into the future? Well, we find out in the sequel.
Where are we? When are we?
We're descending toward Hill Valley, California at 4:29 p.m. on Wednesday, October 21st, 2015.
2015? You mean we're in the future?
It's far out there, 2015, Wednesday, October 21st. Sounds a lot like today.
Movie fans have declared today Back to the Future Day, the day our present catches up with Marty McFly's future.
In the media, there's been a lot of talk about what Back to the Future 2 got right about 2015 and what it got wrong about the technology, especially right now.
Starting with that flying car, not a lot of flying cars out there so far. And I'm okay with this one. Think about people, you see them drive, they're texting. I don't want people crashing into our seventh story window here.
Good point. Well, hoverboards, kind of.
There's been some things, but they require, I guess, a rail underneath them so you don't have freedom of movement. Would you hoverboard?
I would not hoverboard.
I don't
but you know
skateboard.
What I would do? I would totally use a flux capacitor in my car if I had one.
But supposedly there's rumors there is such a thing, or they're calling a thing a flux capacitor in new cars in honor of Back to the Future.
You're listening to Central Time on Wisconsin Public Radio.